Sukkah Daf Lamed Ches. We are starting on Lamed Zayin Amud Beis. We are going to be starting again at the Mishnah. We covered the Mishnah quickly yesterday, but to just review, Veheichan Ayu Menanin, the Mishnah begins with a simple question. Where would they begin Na'anuin? There's a shaking of the lulav. As the Gemara itself is going to point out, there's no reference at all in the Torah that the mitzvah of Netilas Lulav involves shaking. So the Gemara is going to ask the question, how do we even know this altogether? But the Mishnah, assuming that we already know that there's a mitzvah to shake the lulav, when do we shake the lulav? Bahud Hashem, tchilav esof. Uva ana Hashem, hoshiana. Divrei Beis Hillel. Mishnah identifies three locations in which we're going to be doing na'anu. We're going to shake the lulav. One is Hodol Hashem at the beginning of the perek. We're all familiar that Halal is composed of perekim in Tehillim. First perek in Tehillim is Kuf Yud Gimel, and then it covers the next five perekim after that. Kuf Yud Dal, Kuf Tezav, Kuf Tezayin, a very short Kuf Yud Zayin, and finally Kuf Yud Ches. That's the totality of Halal. Kuf Yud Ches opens up with the words Hodol Hashem Kitov Kilam Chasto, followed then by Yom Ha'Na Yisrael Kilam Chasto, and it concludes with the words Hodol Hashem Kitov Kilam Chasto. The way Rashi understands our Mishnah over here is that Na'anun will be done at the beginning of Perek Kuf Yud Ches and at the end of Perek Kuf Yud Ches. Now it gets a little bit more complicated. I mentioned this briefly in yesterday's daf, because in the beginning with Hodol Hashem Kitov and at the end we repeat it, and in the beginning it gets even a little bit more complicated because we have Minhagim of saying it responsively. And not only do we say it responsively, but as the Shliach Sibur says, Hodol Hashem Kitov Kilam Chasto, so we respond with Hodol Hashem Kitov Kilam Chasto. Then the Shliach Sibur says, Yom Ha'Na Yisrael Kilam Chasto. We respond with Hodol Hashem Kitov Kilam Chasto, etc., etc. And we do that for the first four psukim of the 118th parak. So it then becomes a little bit of a complexity in terms of what we're going to do in terms of the Na'anuin. See Tosfos here, I'm not going to go through it now, but see Tosfos here through a discussion in terms of when exactly we do it, and then the obvious next step is to go to shul and see what the minhag is. So anyway, so in the Mishnah, so there are three times where Na'anun is going to be done during Halal. One is going to be at Hodul Hashem at the beginning of Kuf Yud Ches, Hodul Hashem at the end of Perek Kuf Yud Ches, which is the end of Halal, and Ana Hashem Hoshiana. So that is all Shitas Beis Hillel. Beis Shammai Omrim Af Ana Hashem Atzichana. So according to Beis Shammai, even in Ana Hashem Atzichana, there is a mitzvah of Na'anuin. Now why specifically at these times is there Na'anuin? So again, I mentioned it briefly yesterday, and I'm going to mention it even briefer today. And that is Tosfos. Tosfos over here quotes a series of pasuks from Divrei Hayamim that describes how it's shaykh to do the Na'anuin while you're referencing the ideas of Hodul Hashem and Hoshieni. See Tosfos for an explanation. Even after having seen Tosfos, it still requires a little bit more svar and a little bit more explanation. What exactly is the connection between Na'anuin and these particular psukim? I'm Rabbi Kiva Tzofa Yisi Barabin Gamliel, Rabbi Yoshua Shekol Amma Yumananin Eslulavayim Veheim Lo Na'anu Ela Be'ana Shemoshiana. Story is told where Rabbi Kiva says that I was watching carefully Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua. All the rest of the people in the shul were shaking their lulav seemingly at other times. Now, my guess would be the other times would be Ana Hashem Hatzlichana, whatever the other times were. And meanwhile, I was carefully paying attention to Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua, says Rabbi Kiva, and they were only shaking lulav during Ana Hashem Hoshiana, meaning as per the Shita of Beis Hillel. A bit of a curiosity why the rest of the shul was not following in that minhag. The Gedolei Hador, Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua, are doing it only during Ana Hashem Hoshiana, and the rest of the people in Shul are not following the Gedolei Hador. That's a little bit strange. It's certainly a curiosity. I don't have a good pshat. Anyway, we start with the Gemara, Na'anu Aman Dekarshmei. So as Rashi explains over here, the question is, basically, where is Na'anuin coming from? The idea now that all of a sudden our Mishnah drops us into a topic of Na'anuin without giving us any sourcing in terms of where this mitzvah comes from. It's pashut to the Tana that Na'anuin is done. The only question the Tana is dealing with is where do we do it? But to which the Gemara is basically asking, how do we even know that it's done? And what is it? How did it become part of the discussion here in the third parak? So Hasam Kai, so the Gemara says it's going really back in the first Mishnah of the parak. So the first Mishnah tells us that the height of the lulav must be three tfachim, kedei l'na'anebo. So we already learned earlier in this parak that kedei l'na'anebo is to be read as u kedei l'na'anebo. In addition to three tfachim, there has to be an additional tefach so that when you're doing na'anuin, it will be very pronounced in the lulav. the top of the lulav now being at least a tefach higher than the other minim. So you will see that shaking most pronounced in the lulav. That's what we learned in the first Mishnah. Now, v'kamar hecha menanin. And now our Mishnah is saying, okay, good. So now that we know that there is nanuin, which is established already in the first Mishnah, so now our Mishnah is telling us where the nanuin is. Tanan hasam. We are going over a Mishnah in Menachos. Shtei halach mishnei kifsei atzeres ketzad hu oseh. So when it comes to the shtei alechem, the kifsei atzeres, the special kabbarnas that are brought on Shavuos, the shtei alechem, two loaves of bread, uniquely, as an anomaly, so they are chametz. All the other menachos that are brought year-round are going to be made up of matzah. The shtei alechem is made up of chametz. The carbon toda is also chametz, but part of the carbon toda anyway. The shtei alechem and the kifsei atzeres also is unique in that it is shamet tzibor. So how exactly are they going to be waived? Meaning, the Mishnah is teaching us now that they are waived. The Pasuk says that they're going to be waived, and the Mishnah gives us a little bit more direction, instruction, in terms of how to be waiving the lechem, the shtei alechem, and the kifsei atzeres. So, ketzan huosa, meiniach shtei alechem al gabi shnei kvasim. So you're going to take the two loaves of bread and put them on top of the kvasim. Rashi says the kvasim at this point in time are still alive. So this is, to say the least, a very funny visual, where you're having bread on top of a live sheep, and you're having seemingly one kohen who's lifting everything up. Okay? That's either a really strong kohen or a really small sheep, whichever the case is. And he does tenufa, molech umeivi, malo morid, back and forth, up and down. Shenamar asher nafa asher ram. So the pasuk talks about tenufa harama. So tenufa is the back and forth. The harama is up and down. And so there is a mitzvah of tenufa as it relates to the shtei halachim. Now on this Mishnah, I'm Rav Yochanan. So Rav Yochanan makes the following comment: Molochem maybe lemishar baruchah shalom. So why do we go back and forth? Because we are indicating, we're highlighting that this is for Hakadosh Baruch Hu. Hakadosh Baruch Hu, who is in full operation of the dal ruchos, the four directions of the world: north, south, east, west. So that all is being operated by Hakadosh Baruch Hu, created and operated by Hakadosh Baruch Hu. So that's what we get. That's what we get from the back and forth. Now, seemingly, the fact that it corresponds to the Dal Rucho, so it would seem to indicate that you have to go in all four directions. Again, a much lengthier discussion, and I'm not even scratching the surface, but a much lengthier discussion in terms of how exactly we are to do Tanufa. From our Gemara over here, the only sense that you get is that it's just simply back and forth. Molech umevi. And meanwhile, of course, you go to any shul and you watch anyone doing the nanuin with the lulav, so you're going to be seeing them doing it in four different directions. And then specifically, which are the directions to do it in and where to start so that is subject to minhagim. But anyway, from our Gemara, the only sense you get is back and forth. On the other hand, we just saw in the Gemara that you are doing it to represent that Akash Baruch Hu is operating Dal Ruchos. Okay. Malu Mar, you go up and down, let me share Shamayim Var Shalom. And up and down, that corresponds to the fact that Akash Baruch Hu is creators of both Shamayim and Arts. So that's one way to say it in terms of the significance and the meaning behind the Tanufa. Ben Ma'arava, Masnu Hachi and Eretz Yisrael, they say it a little bit differently. Amar Rabbi Chama Baruch Va, Amar Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina, Molucha Mevi, Kedei Latsa Ruchos Ros. So the back and forth, so that is to make sure that the winds do not blow do not blow adversely. In other words, we don't get hurricanes and winds that'll be adverse. Malu marid up and down kedilatzor talalim raim, and we don't want the rains to be bad rains. Meaning, we want the rains to be lebracha and not leklala. So that is the significance behind the tenufa. Amar Rabbi Yosi bar Avin v'tem Rabbi Yosi bar Zevila. To which now the Gemara says that zosamer. So what do we gain from all this? What do we see from all this? That as far as a proper tenufa that's done. So it is done by the kifsei atzeres, and as we're in a moment, we're going to also transfer all this over to the lulav. But we're seeing now that the nanuin, the tenufa that's done with the kifsei atzeres, is so significant. Not only does it indicate that we're doing it in order to remind ourselves that this is for HaKadosh Baruch Hu created and operated all four directions of the earth and Shemayim Ba'aretz, but on top of that also, it's to be able to navigate and negotiate the winds and the rains. So what do we see from all this? As we now turn to the top of Lamed Chesem et Aleph, Shayari Mitzvah, Makvenes Oparanios, that even though the Nanuin, or in the case of the carbon, the Tanufa, is not an Iker HaMitzvah, meaning it's not Ma'akev, it's not essential. So certainly it is a mitzvah to do the tenufa, but it's not going to hold back the carbon. A carbon that's brought, even in the absence of the tenufa, is still going to be a kasha carbon. That's why we're describing it right now as shayare mitzvah, literally translated as remnants of the mitzvah. And meanwhile, the remnant of the mitzvah is so important, ma'akvin is supernus, it's able to hold back any type of catastrophe. It's able to make sure that nature and rain is going to be conducting itself in a proper fashion. Shari tenufa, shari mitzvah, hi uvelteres ruchos talal imrayim. So we see that the tenufa, despite the fact that it is just simply shayari mitzvah, it's not ma'akiv, it's not essential, and it can hold back the adverse winds and the bad rains, and so you see the significance of shayari mitzvah. And then, just to complete the sentence, so if that's true by the shayari mitzvah, the Gemara doesn't say this, but it's pretty obvious that this is the Gemara's point. So imagine if we're talking about the actual mitzvah itself, and the effects and the positive effects that would come out from doing the actual mitzvah itself. V'amar Rava, so all this was just to bring us to this one particular point. So we established tenufa as it relates to the Shtei Alechem, the Kirsei Atzeres. And we spoke about the significance of why we're going to be doing the tenufa by the Shtei Alechem, the Kirsei Atzeres. And now, V'amar Rava, V'chem Belulav. So Rava says, and everything we said regarding the significance of the tenufa as it relates to the Kirsei Atzeres, Shnei Alechem, so the same thing can be said regarding the lulav as well. The na'anuin that we do, which is back and forth and up and down, are all going to be the same representation. Rav Acha bar Yaakov, mematilei maisilei. So Rav Acha bar Yaakov would go back and forth with his lulav ve'amar, and he would say the following, dengira be'ina desitna. This should go right into the eyes of the satan. V'lav milsehi. Now the Gemara says, now, despite the fact that the kavana may be a good kavana, but articulating that, the Gemara says, we don't do that. V'lav milsehi. Mishum dasi laguria, baby, because all we're going to do is provoke the satan. Rashi says, once the satan is provoked, he's going to be moser nefesh. We don't want him to try any harder than he already does. He does a really good job. And the last thing we need to do is provocation to make him try even harder. So, the Gemara says, al tiftach pele satan, so don't say it. Now, it could be that the kavana is a good kavana, but in terms of saying it, that's what the Gemara says that one should avoid. Continuing now in the Mishnah, Misha Baba Derech, so someone's coming back home on Sukkah. So he went away and he's coming back home. In a moment, just to give away some of the Gemara, I don't want to say it so early because it's going to be a punchline, but presumably we're not talking about the first day of Yontif, meaning where are you traveling on the first day of Yontif? So presumably it's sometime during Chol HaMoed. But if for a moment you can ignore that I said that, so Misha Baba Derech V'la Yabiyad Lulav Lito. And so he was traveling and he didn't have a lulav with him and now he came back home. So when you get home, so what you should be doing is you should be taking lulav. The mitzvah of lulav is for all 7 days of Sukkot. Now again, I'm foreshadowing the Gemara coming up. On the first day, it's a mitzvah d'oraisa. All subsequent days, it's a mitzvah d'rabbanan, takana rav Yochanan and Zakkai. But there's a mitzvah. Right now, we could say it nice and simple. There's a mitzvah all 7 days of Sukkot to take a lulav. The mitzvah is during the day. Now, obviously, it's reason makdim in the mitzvah, so you want to do it as early as possible. But if you didn't, for whatever reason, you didn't do it in the morning, so you do it in the afternoon. You have the entirety of the day. You have until shkias achama in order to take lulav. So what the Mishnah is telling us is yitol. Now, the Mishnah says al shulchano. What does it mean, al shulchano? So it means is that even though you're in the middle of the meal, meaning you came home after a long trip, it's chol hamoed sukkos, and you're starving. So immediately you ran into your sukkah in order to have a meal. And right now, in the middle of the meal, as you start calming down from your hunger, so then you realize, oh yeah, the dalam minim, I haven't yet shaken lulav. So at that point in time, what the Mishnah is telling us is that you must stop, interrupt in the middle of the meal in order to take dalam minim. Lo nato shachris yitol ben arabayim. Now, if you don't take it in the morning, so you can take it in the afternoon. Shekol yom kasher lulav. So the entire day is kasher for the mitzvah of lulav. The Gemara is bothered. Amar not lo ashulchan lemeimer demafsek. So it's pretty clear now in our Mishnah that if you have not taken lulav, and even though you're in the middle of the meal, you must stop, interrupt the meal in order to shake lulav. The Gemara says, I'm bothered based on a Mishnah on Shabbos. In the beginning of Masechta Shabbos in the first parak, so the first Mishnah talks about Hutzah. But then the next Mishnah after that, that's on Daf Tes, so it talks about Mincha. Now, it's not really discussing Mincha on Friday afternoon, although the rest of the first parak is talking about Friday afternoon, but it's talking about Mincha in general. It's talking about being mafsik for Mincha. So, im ischilo ein mafsikin. So the Mishnah says that if what you did is that you started, right? It's in reference to Tfilas Mincha. and you shouldn't go get a haircut, and you shouldn't go sit down and eat, and you shouldn't sit in judgment. And the Mishnah goes over various activities, which ideally, if mincha time has arrived, you should have mincha. However, the Mishnah goes on to say, but if you started any of these activities, there's no need to stop. And one of these activities is having a meal. So, let's put these two Mishnah side by side, the Mishnah here in Sukkah, the Mishnah there in Shabbos, and what we are looking at is a stira. Our Mishnah in Sukkah says, in the middle of the meal, you have forgotten that you haven't taken lulav yet. Stop, interrupt the middle of the meal in order to take dalaminim. Meanwhile, the Mishnah in Shabbos says, is that if you're in the middle of the meal, and you realize that you haven't said mincha yet, you don't have to stop, you can finish the meal. That's a stira. So Rav Safra seems to give a very straightforward answer, and that is it depends what time of the day you're having the meal. If you are able to complete the meal and still have time afterwards, so that's the Mishnah in Shabbos. And that's why the Mishnah in Shabbos says you don't have to stop in the middle of the meal. Maybe our Mishnah over here in Sukkah is talking about a case where if we continue with the meal, we would be in the meal for the remainder of the remainder of this man, and we'll have lost the mitzvah of dalaminim altogether. It's possible. So Amarava, my kusha, Dilma hadaraisa de rabbanan. So Rava says, look, even before you have to get to that answer, establishing ukimtas in the Mishnayos, can't you just simply answer fundamentally? The mitzvah of dalaminim is a mitzvah daraisa. So the mitzvah daraisa, you stop in the middle of the meal. The mitzvah of mincha is a mitzvah de rabbanan. Major machlokas between the Rambam and the Ramban, whether or not davening in general is a mitzvah d'oraisa or mitzvah d'rabbanan. But for just a simple approach to Agamar over here, let's assume like the Ramban, let's assume that davening is a mitzvah d'rabbanan. So it's a mitzvah d'rabbanan. So for a mitzvah d'rabbanan, I don't have to stop in the middle of the meal. So we don't have to give ukimtas, we could just give a fundamental difference between the mitzvah of dalaminim and the mitzvah of mincha. So Elam Ravi, Kasha, Akasha. So Ravi says, but although a fundamental distinction can be made between dalaminim and mincha, but let's stay in our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says, so first the Mishnah says that you're in the middle of the meal, stop in the middle of the meal in order to take dalaminim. And then, and then the Gemara says that there really is no urgency, meaning if you didn't take it in the morning, you could take it later in the afternoon. So in the first part of our Mishnah, we don't have to go to any other Mishnah. In our Mishnah, the first part of our Mishnah would indicate urgency. Stop in the middle of the meal in order to take dalaminim. And the second half of the Mishnah is very casual, very comfortable. You know, if you don't take it in the morning, yeah, you could take it later in the afternoon. So Amar Safra, lo kasha, adika shas b'yom, hadalika shas b'yom. So now the Gemara says, now we can give the answer in terms of the two halves of our Mishnah talking about two different times of the day. The casual nature of the second half of our Mishnah is talking about where there's more time. It's kind of self-evident within the second half of the Mishnah. The first half of the Mishnah, which talks about urgency, could be talking about where the meal is right now sometime in the late afternoon. And if I don't stop now, I may miss it altogether. I'm Rav Zera, my Kusha. Doma mitzvah lov suke v'ilo pasik yitol bein arbaim. Shekola yom kashalululov. Rabbi Zera says, I'm not even sure if you have to do that. Meaning, you don't have to give ukimtas in the Mishnah. You can understand the Mishnah as one singular thought, and that is, ideally, when should you be taking lulav? Your first opportunity. Now, if it happens to be that you remember in the middle of the meal, so ideally take the lulav now. Now, if you didn't do it ideally, so then you do in fact have time later in the day. That's a simple understanding of our Mishnah. So, Elam Rav Zera la'olam kedamina mikara. So Rav Zera says, so look, our Mishnah never bothered me. Meaning there was no stira between the first part of the Mishnah and second part of the Mishnah. And according to Rabbi Zera, I don't have to give ukimtas in our Mishnah. Our Mishnah could just simply be understood on the very simple level of lechatchila, do the mitzvah as early as you can. But b'di'evit, if you do it later, it's still going to be yotzei. That's our Mishnah. I want to go back to the stira between our Mishnah and the Mishnah in Shabbos regarding mincha. Now remember, earlier we said that we can make a fundamental difference. The mitzvah of dalaminim is a mitzvah daraisa. The mitzvah of mincha is a mitzvah d'rabbanan. So the udekash lacha d'raisa ad d'rabbanan hachab yam tov sheni d'rabbanan askinan. But on the other hand, says Rabbi Zera, I don't think the fundamental difference is true. Why? Because our Mishnah over here is not talking about dalaminim on day number one. Our Mishnah is talking about dalaminim on the subsequent days of Sukkot, where the mitzvah of dalaminim is only d'rabbanan. Now it's no longer a comparison of apples and oranges. It's a comparison of apples and apples. The mitzvah of dalaminim post day one is the rabbanan. The mitzvah of mincha is the rabbanan. So now it's the rabbanan versus the rabbanan. And now the Gemara says, now we have a wonderful stira. Well, it's not wonderful, but it's a stira. meaning because our Mishnah over here is giving us the sense of urgency. Stop in the middle of the meal. The Mishnah Shabbos says, no, you don't have to stop in the middle of the meal. And Dekanam and Diktani, and the idea that our Mishnah is talking about not day one, but Sukkos, day two and onward, and Misha Baba Dachmi Yamidah Lulav, Disakadacha Biantavisha Mishare. Because look, our Mishnah is clearly talking about Cholamoid, because our Mishnah says that she came back home from a long trip. And now, go back to what I said at the very beginning of the Mishnah, and now the Mishnah is in fact discussing somebody's coming back from a long trip. You're not coming back from a long trip on Yantav. On Yantav, you have the Yisr Tchum. You couldn't be coming from anywhere, legally, legitimately. The only allowance that you have to be traveling for long distance is only going to be during Cholamoid, which is obviously post day one. So it sounds like our Mishnah is talking about Cholamoid, where the mitzvah of Dalaminim is the Rabbanan. And now Rabbi Zera says, I would like to reintroduce the Mishnah here against the Mishnah in Shabbos. And it is the Rabbanan versus the Rabbanan. So Rabbi Zera says, I really think that question is in fact good. And without having given an answer, so we could have suggested any of the answers that we gave previously. In other words, maybe we'll have to make a difference in terms of the kimtos. We could do that. But he would like to resuscitate the original formulation of the question with the inability to make a distinction between Daraisa and Darabana. Okay, we're up to the next Mishnah. Mishaya Eved Oisha O Katan Makrinoso. So let's say we're back to Hala, meaning in the previous Mishnah. Well, two Mishnahs ago. So we talked about Nanun. We talked about Nanun during Halal. So over here, the Mishnah now is going to be treating us to Halacha regarding Halal and specifically the recitation of Halal. So the Mishnah says that let's say you're Eved Kanani or a woman or a minor. So they happen to be reading the Halal for you. When I say reading the Halal for you, at this point in time, you don't know Halal. You unfortunately did not receive an education. You're not learned. You don't know how to say Halal. Okay, but you would like to do so. It's a mitzvah to say Halal. So you would like to do so. So, you listen to any one of these people who are not obligated in the mitzvah of halal. Now, presumably, the simplest explanation is because it's a mitzvah seser shazman grama, and so therefore women and avadim are going to be pater. Now, I know that for a katan, the katan is chayv midin chinuch, and so you could argue that he's chayv on a derabbanan level. So for our purposes right now, I'm going to ignore that point. It's a good point, and I'm just going to ignore it for the time being. For our purposes right now, for reasons which demand a better explanation, but we could just say it simply right now, they're not obligated. So you're listening to halal from these people that are not obligated. So now the Mishnah tells us, Makrin oso, ona acharei mashahim omrim. So you have to repeat everything they're saying word for word. Meaning if you want to fulfill the mitzvah of halal, so it's not enough to hear them say halal, but you must repeat every word. Now, as we're going to learn in today's daf, so we have this concept of shomea ka'ona. Listening is like you're actually saying it. Now that's true, but only if the source of where you're hearing it from is somebody who's chayiv in the mitzvah. Over here, if the person who's chayiv in the mitzvah if the person who's saying it is not chayiv in the mitzvah, like an isha, like an eved, like a katan, so then your listening is not going to be registered as shomea ka'ona, because you're not hearing it from somebody who's chayiv. Therefore, the only way you're going to be yotze is by you repeating it word for word. And the Mishnah over here says, and by the way, the person who is not learned, so he should be cursed. Now, it's a harsh statement of the Mishnah, no doubt about it. But basically, the Chachmei HaMishnayos are very critical about somebody who does not take advantage of an opportunity to learn. Obviously, we're talking about somebody who had an opportunity to learn and just simply was negligent in terms of educating himself. And the Mishnah here speaks in really harsh terms of the censorship of such an individual for not taking the effort to go and learn. Now contrast that to the following. Let's say somebody who is a bar chiyuve, a bar hachi, and he's reading the halal. So ona acharav haluluka. So yeah, so you respond, but you don't have to respond word for word what he's saying. Now there is an appropriate response of haluluka, which we'll talk more about over the course of the remainder of today's daf. But you don't have to. It is unnecessary to repeat every single word. Why? Because over here now we have the principle of shomea kaone. Because now you're hearing it from someone who himself is chayev. So now every word that you're hearing, it's ki'one. It's as if you're saying it. And so therefore, you don't have to repeat word for word. And the Mishnah then goes on to conclude that there are minhagim. Now, as far as minhagim are concerned, so minhag obviously is going to be dependent on what the practice is of the people. If the practice of the people is to repeat psukim, so then repeat psukim. If the practice of the people is not to repeat psukim, so then don't repeat psukim. And if there's a minhag to say a bracha, the Gemara will become very clear in tomorrow's daf. We're talking about the bracha after halal, not the one before halal. So then, good. So then make a bracha. If the bracha is not to make a bracha after halal, so then don't make a bracha after halal. Okay. This idea of repetition of psukim, so what is it a reference to? So it's the following. Again, if you look at the prakim in Tehillim, best right now, if you looked at it, not in the Seder, but you looked at it just in terms of a Sefer Tehillim. So what you'll notice is the following. Now, everything I'm saying right now is just a paraphrase of Rashi. Rashi makes all these points right over here in the Gemara, but I'm just going to simply paraphrase. So you look carefully at the beginning of Perek Kuf Yud Ches. So built into the Perek, in other words, without any of our additions, is basically built in repetition. I'm just picking out just phrases just so you can hear the repetition. And you get the point, hopefully. And that is that there's a natural repetitive nature of the psukim up until you get to the pasuk of Pischuli. Pischuli sharetzeka vavamo dekazeh Hashem l'Hashem tzadikim yavovo. Now, even there, you still have the repetition. Odecha ki ani sani. So it's at this point in time where we've pretty much lost the repetitive nature of the psukim. So, the minhag started that basically what we're going to do is that we're going to replicate, meaning since the first half of Kuf Yud Ches is repetitive in nature, so what we do is that we finish off Perek Kuf Yud Ches, starting from Odecha, and we repeat the psukim to keep that repetitive nature. Everything I said is basically the way Rashi understood this idea of repeating. Now, you don't have to repeat. This is all simply a function of minhag. If your minhag is to repeat, great. And if your minhag is not to repeat, that's also fine. And as far as the bracha is concerned, we'll save off the bracha discussion for tomorrow. Tomorrow, the Gemara is going to be talking about the bracha, differentiating between the bracha before halal versus the bracha after halal. Tanu Rabbanan. We're on Lamed Chesed Amud Aleph. We're starting with the Gemara, the Baam, the Amud, Be'emes Amr. The emes, every time you see that word, it means, says Rashi, it is a halacha mikubelis. It's an accepted halacha. Nobody's arguing on this point. And that is, ben mevarech l'aviv, ve'ever mevarech l'rabba, v'isha mevarech l'bal. And this is talking about benching. Son will bench on behalf of his father. The ever will be benching on behalf of his master. The isha will be benching on behalf of her husband. Ava amru chachamim, tava me'era la'adam she'ishto, v'ano mevarechim la. However, the chachamim, once again, they were very critical of somebody who, instead of learning themselves how to bench, needs to hear it from any one of these people, and meanwhile, they should have educated themselves. Good. That's the Mishnah Brachos. Now, again, the reason why the Gemara quoted the Mishnah Brachos over here, it's very similar to our scenario in which halal, for your failure to have learned halal and to have to hear it from these people, so therefore, tavalo me'era, so the chachamim were critical of the individual, so the same thing is true regarding benching as well. Again, this is a much lengthier discussion. I'll just hit on it, and that is the idea that in the Mishnah in Brachos, so we just went through. So it says that a son can bench on behalf of the father, and how does that work? Meaning the son's obligation is midrabbanan through chinuch, father's obligation presumably is minatorah. So how exactly does that work? And how come over here by halal the son is not going to be able to say it for the father. The katan can't say it for the av. Okay, so there's a lot to iron out over there. Our Gemara here is not going to be covering that topic. The only thing our Gemara was interested in is the commonality of tavala me'era. But obviously there's a lot of issues that need more resolution. And just for the daf yomi, we're just simply not going to go through it. But I do want to raise a little bit of an awareness of it. Amar Rav. As we now are ready to turn to the Amud Beis, Hilchsa gevirta ikla mishma mi minhaga de halila. Based on various minhagim of halal, we can learn out great halachas, meaning as follows. The way Rashi understands it. There are a lot of minhagim that are built into halal. These minhagim that are built into halal are all reflected, or all reflections of major halachas. We're going to go through six minhagim that were common and prevalent during that were during halal. Now, to this very day, some of these minhagim have stuck, and to this very day, some of these minhagim have fell to the wayside. I can only speculate in terms of what happened to some of these minhagim, which we no longer do, but for our purposes right now, the Gemara just simply wants to highlight that the reason why these minhagim were stitched and woven into the halal was just to reminder, to reflect various halachas. So let's go through all six. Number one, who omer halaluka? So the Sheikh Sibra would be saying the word halaluka, which is the opening word of halal. Remember, halal opens up with perakuf yud gimel and telem. So it opens up with the words haluka. Then vehein, and then what the Sibra would say is, vehein omrim haluka. So their response would be haluka. So, and basically what you would have is you would have the Shliach Tzibur listening to the Tzibur actually saying Haluka. So it would be Haluka followed with the response of Haluka. Mikan, Shemitzvah Lanu is Haluka. So that means to say that the beginning of Halo, so even for people who are knowledgeable and know how to say Halo, so, and they're not really prepared to listen to the, they don't need the Shliach Tzibur in order to say the Halo, they could say on their own, but still, it's there as a reminder of the correct response should be Haleluka. Okay, that's minhag number one. Now again, as I mentioned, some of these minhag fell away, and needless to say, this minhag is long gone. So where did it go? Excellent question. Anyway, we don't have that minhag anymore. Minhag number two, Hu Omer Halu Avdi Hashem. So now we're up to the next phrase in Halu. So obviously we're up to the next three words of Halu, Halu Avdi Hashem, and Vehein Omrim Haluka. And the Tzibur would now answer Haluka. Mikan. So if you have somebody who's reading halal to you, now he's a gadol, which means that you don't have to respond word for word. It would be sufficient for you to just simply listen. However, what is appropriate is that there be a response. In other words, there should be some sort of chorus. And the correct response would be haleluka. That's the correct response. So that's what the second minhag is there coming to communicate. Again, this minhag is long gone. We no longer abide by this minhag. Okay, and again, I don't know what happened to it, but that's minhag number two. Minhag number three. Hu Omer Hodel Hashem. So now we're well into Halo. So we have just gone now covered, we just read Kuf Yud Gimel, Kuf Yud Dal, Kuf Tesvav, Kuf Tes Zayin, even Kuf Yud Zayin, and now we're the final parak of Tehillim of Halo, and that's Kuf Yud Ches. So he says Hodel Hashem. So Hein Omrim Hodel Hashem. So now in terms of a chorus, so up until now, after every phrase, so the people listening would say Haluka. Now, after every phrase, it would be Hodul Hashem. So Mikan Shemitzvah Lanos Reshe Prakim. And that comes and teaches us that the correct response should be the beginning of the paragraph. Now, this gets a little bit interesting, and I'll mention it, but I don't have great explanations, in that basically what our Gemara just did is it broke up a Hala into two parts. Part number one starts in Perkuf Yud Gimel, and part number two starts in Perkuf Yud Ches. Now, it certainly sounds like the way the Gemara just organized Halal is that Kuf Yud Gimel through Kuf Yud Zayin, that's all considered part one of Halal. Even though in terms of Prakim of Tehillim, so it's broken up into five different Prakim. But meanwhile, our Gemara treats it all as one Perek. Now, one of those bigger topics and discussions, I'm not sure, is that this idea that Tehillim is broken up into Prakim. Is that something that's part of our Mesora? Now, we know that the Prakim that the Chumash is broken up into, that's not our Mesora. That was done by the church. We kept it. But in other words, that's not part of our Mesora. So is the same thing true regarding the Prakim of Tehillim? There is a Gemara in the beginning of Brachos which would seem to indicate that the Prakim of Tehillim is part of the Mesora. Okay. If that's true, so then it makes our Gemara over here a little bit challenging. Because our Gemara says is that when do we have now a change of a Rosh Perek? When's the next section of Halo? All the way at the beginning of Kuf Yud Ches. Okay. So I'm not quite clear in terms of why the Gemara over here assumes that section one of Halo is from Haluka, the beginning, all the way up to the end of Kuf Yud Zayin. right? Ki gavar alenu chazdo v'emes Hashem alam haluka. That's the end of section one. And section two begins with hodo Hashem kitov. Okay. But that is certainly the way the Gemara, our Gemara over here is organizing. Hallo? Good. So, mitzvah lanos rashi prakim. Good. Idmar nami in the Gemara, before we get on to the fourth minug. So, idmar nami, the Gemara says, confirmation, amar evchana bar rava, mitzvah lanos rashi prakim. Good. It's a mitzvah to answer rashi prakim. Next. Fourth minug. Hu amir ana shem oshiyana. Vehein omrim ana shem oshiyana. So the Sheikh Sibra says Ana Hashem Hoshiyana, and we respond with Ana Hashem Hoshiyana. Now, finally, we're at a minug where the minug has continued. I do take that back, meaning the third minug has continued as well, meaning Hodo Hashem Kitoki Amachasto. So there is a response, meaning that even to this very day, we respond. Now, oddly enough, interestingly enough, we respond, I made this point before, but just we respond to the first four psukim of Kuf Yud Ches. So we have a response to the first four psukim of Kuf Yud Ches. Again, I'm not sure where that minhag came from, but certainly in terms of minhag number three, we still have a version of that to this day. I'm sorry, now minhag number four. Ana Hashem Hoshiyana ve'hein omrim Ana Hashem Hoshiyana. Now this minhag continues to this very day. What is this minhag about? So mikan shimayakat and makre also onen acherav mashu omer. So if somebody is saying the halal for you, and if somebody who is not a bar chiyuva like a katan, so that means to say that when you go ahead and you repeat it, you must repeat it word for word, and that is encrypted in the minog of Ana Hashem Hoshiyana, which kind of strange in that ask anybody out there who has not learned a Gemara, why do we repeat Ana Hashem Hoshiyana, Ana Hashem Hoshiyana, and Ana Hashem Atzlichana? So why do we do a full response? So it's to remind us of this halacha. It's just kind of ironic that unless you're holding by the Gemara, no one is reminded of this particular halacha. Okay, anyway, but that was minhag number four. Minhag number five. U'amir ana shem atzeichana, ve'hin omrim ana shem atzeichana, mikan shim ba lichpo kofal. So now the idea that ana shem atzeichana is going to be repeated, so that teaches us the idea of kfeila. That if you want to repeat psukim, so you have the right to do so, it is a legitimate minhag. And finally, the sixth of the minhagim, homer baruch haba v'hein omrim v'shem Hashem. So the Sheikh Sibur says baruch haba, the Sibur says v'shem Hashem, and mikan v'shomei ka'ona. So this teaches us shomei ka'ona. The idea that if I listen without having to actually say it, as long as I'm listening to it from somebody who's a bar hachi, so who's a bar chiyuv, so then my listening is tantamount to me saying it, and that's the principle of shomei ka'ona. So those are the six minhagim that are reflections of various halachas. Okay, and just one more point, and then we'll finish for today. Actually, let me just first read a little bit more Gemara, and then we'll make one last point. So Ba Minei Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba. So they asked the question from Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba. So Shama V'lo Anamahu. So let's say you heard, but you didn't actually say it. So are you fulfilling your obligation? Meaning, the Shomei Ka'ona allow you to fulfill your obligation without even saying it. So Amar Lahu, so Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba's response was, Chakima, those are the Talmid Chachamim, Safraya, those are basically the school teachers, right? The people who are teaching Cheder. Reishe Amma, okay, the heads of the nation, Darshaya, Darshanim, so Amru Shama B'lo Anaya Yatsa. So everyone's of the opinion that if you hear, even though you're not actually saying it, you're yotze. Shomei ka'ona works, even if you don't actually say the words. Itmar nami, the Gemara quotes as well. Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi, Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Levi, Mishum bar Kapara, Minayin. Le shomei ka'ona, how do I know about this principle, shomei ka'ona, dechsev? So the Gemara quotes an episode in Malachim Beis. So Chilkiyahu HaKohen finds a Sefer Torah. And he brings it over to the king at the time, who was Yoshiyahu. The Pasuk reads, the Gemara over here has got needs a couple of corrections in terms of the correct citation of the Pasuk, but as called Divrei HaSefer Asher Kara Melech Yehuda, so the Pasuk gives attribution to Yoshiyahu for having read the Sefer Torah. V'chi Yoshiyahu Karan, v'lo Shafan Karan. Now, if you look over there in the context of the Pesukim, you'll see it wasn't Yoshiyahu who read it. It was rather Shafan, Dechsev, the Pasuk says. Vayikareehu Shafan lifnei hamelach. Shafan read in front of the king. So elamikan shomei ka'ona. So over here you see that shomei ka'ona. By listening intently, So it's as if you actually said it. So Vidilma Brasa de Karani Shafan Karay Yoshio, the Gemara says, okay, but how do you know that you got the story right? It could very well be that Shafan read the Pasuk and then Yoshio repeated the Pasuk word for word. And it doesn't teach us that Shomei Kohen, it works if you just listen. Maybe you do have to in fact say it, and maybe Yoshio actually said it. And the Gemara says, no, Amar Ravacha bar Yaakov lo sakadacha. No, don't entertain such a thought. Dechsiv, the Pasuk says, Yanrach levavcha vatikana mipanai Hashem b'shamecha. So, b'shamecha v'lo b'karecha. So, the Navi says to Yoshiyahu that you listened to the Sefer Torah. Meaning, and we're just being medayik in the language. You listened to the Sefer Torah, you didn't read the Sefer Torah. So that means to say that we know that Yoshiyahu didn't read the Sefer Torah. We know that he just listened to the Sefer Torah. And despite that, it's ki'ilu, he read the Torah himself. So from there, we deduce the idea of Shomei Kohanim. Good. So obviously, Shomei Kohanim is a major topic, and it's a major point of discussion. And we can just go over one detail over here, which is found in our Rashi. Rashi writes over here, and you can see the Rashi, Dibra Maskel, Hu Amar Baruch Haba, V'heim Omrim B'Shem Hashem. So Rashi says, "V'baruch haba samchan olav ve'ein onim lo atevos katzman v'lo haluka." So in this minhag, in the sixth minhag, so you have the Sheikh Sieber saying baruch haba, you have the people saying b'shem Hashem, and what's happening is that just by virtue of the fact of listening, just listening without repeating, so that's going to be tantamount to actually saying it to remind us of this halach of Shomei Kohanim. So mikan nilmad l'she'in yodeh lo likros v'lo la'anos im shama b'kiven libo l'shmoa afa pishalo ana yatsa. Okay, so this tells us now the very basic halacha, that if somebody is not knowledgeable, not to read and not to respond, but as long as he listens intently, so then he can fulfill his obligation using the mechanism of Shomei Kohanim. Yes, it's true. I'm saying this just parenthetically. Yes, it's true according to Rashi. It certainly does sound like Shomei Kohanim only works in a situation where the listener is unable to speak, unable to say the words because he's not learned. There is what to discuss within this Rashi. But in the meantime, however, I want to focus on the next part of Rashi. V'chein lemispalim b'tzibur v'sheikh tzibur omer, the word should be kedusha. O yeheshmei rabba, yishtiku b'tfilasam v'yishmu'u b'kavana, v'harehen ka'onen. So you get to a problem, a dilemma that happens pretty often, and that is that you're in the middle of your Shmoneh Esrei, right? The shliach tzibur is already up to kedusha, so now he's saying kedusha, or alternatively, the Shliach Tzibur now is saying Kaddish and saying the most important line of Yehesh Mei Rabbah, and you're in the middle of Shemoneh Esrei, so what should you do? So for you to stop in the middle of your Shemoneh Esrei to say Kedusha, to say Kaddish, that would be a hefsek. That would be an interruption in your Shemoneh Esrei. So to actually stop and to respond, so that's out of the question. How about stopping and listening? So Rashi says over here, correct. That's absolutely correct. So what you should do is you should stop, and you should listen. And based on the principle of Shomei Kohanim, so you get credited for actually saying it. The Ukashiyah Gemara Kedusha, Yachzul Tzilasam, when Kedusha is over, they go back and continue with your davening. V'chein Yisad, Rav Yudai, Gaon, Baal Halachas Gedolos. And the Bahag says the same thing as well, that this is a proper procedure. Now Rashi's position over here, Tosis makes his point. This point of Rashi is said twice in Shas, in today's Daf Lamed Ches of Sukkah, and also in Brachos. So so this point of Rashi is being made, and both times Tosos is objecting to Rashi's idea, because Rashi over here seems to be, it seems to be balancing a really, really hard act, which is, on one hand, Shomei Kohanim gives you credit as if you said Kedusha. On the other hand, it's not like you actually said it, because if you actually said it, so then it would be a hefsek in your Shemoneh Esrei. So Rashi over here is in a really, really balanced position of Shomei Kohanim, where you get credit, but it's not like you actually said it. In other words, according to Rashi, the focus is Shomei Kohanim. It's like you said it, but not that you actually said it. Okay, and Tosos, both places, says that he strongly disagrees. If you were to stop and listen, Shomei Kohanim makes it as if you actually said it, and obviously that would be a hefsek in your Shemoneh Esrei, and you can't do that. Tosa says that he strongly encourages that you should not stop and you should just continue with your Shemoneh Esrei. But Tosa does acknowledge, certainly in Brachos, he says it clearly. The Tosa does acknowledge that the minhag is like Rashi, that you should stop in the middle of your Shemoneh Esrei and you should listen, and you'll get credit based on Shomei Kohanim. Okay. Anyway, that's a really fundamental point. In terms of just very basics of Shomei Kohanim, obviously much more to discuss. But It's a good starting point. We're going to stop over here. Amar Rav is where we're going to begin tomorrow. Let's quickly recap, review. The first mission that we covered on Lamed Zayin Amud Beis dealt with the Nanuin. The mission tells us that the Nanuin is done during specific times of Hallel. Which are those specific times? So it's Hodu at the beginning, at the end of Perek Kuf Yeches. It's Ana Hashem Oshiyana. And there is a Shita of Beis Shammai, but the Gemara says, but we don't follow like Shita of Beis Shammai. Where is Nanuin coming up? It's coming off the first Mishnah. First Mishnah tells us the height of the lulav is 3 tefachim plus kedei lenaneh, an extra tefach to really show and pronounce the Nanuin that's done by the lulav. And so now, our Mishnah is picking up from the very first Mishnah, where is the Nanuin going to be done? During Hallel. The Gemara goes over the idea of Nanuin as it relates to carbon, specifically Shtei Halechem and the Kifsei Atzeres that are brought on Shavuos. So there's a mitzvah of Tenufa. The Gemara here quotes the Mishnah of Tenufa. What's the significance of the Tenufa of the Shtei Halechem and the Kifsei Atzeres? The Gemara gives two explanations. One is to show us, to highlight that we are doing this L'shem HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The back and forth is to the four directions that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has created and operated the world. The up and down is for Shamayim Va'aretz. The second svara of the Gemara is that basically it provides a bracha for the world. It's to stop the bad winds. It's to stop the bad rains. That's the purposes of the Tenufa vis-a-vis the Shtei Halechem and the Kifsei Atzeres. Similarly, over here, says the Gemara, same thing is true by Lulav, meaning that the point of shaking the Lulav is going to be for the same purpose. And the Gemara also makes another general point, and that is that Shayari Mitzvah, the shaking of the carbon, the shaking of the Lulav, is not the Iker HaMitzvah. It is not ma'akev, and yet its significance can even stop a catastrophe and calamity from occurring. So the Gemara says that it just gives us a sense of the koach of a mitzvah. We then did the next mission on Lamechet Simon Aleph. Somebody came home, hasn't taken lulav yet. He sat down for a meal. In the middle of the meal, he remembers, stop in the middle of the meal and take the lulav. Do the mitzvah of lekichas halulav. The Gemara notes a seemingly austere between our mission and the mission of Shabbos, and the back and forth in terms of how to reconcile what seemingly is austere between the two. Next mission, Lamed Ches Amud Aleph, the bottom Mishnah. So if you are hearing Hallel from either a woman or an Eved or a child, so because they are not Chayiv in the mitzvah of Hallel, so for you to be Yotzei, so you have to repeat every word that they're saying so that you can fulfill your obligation. On the other hand, if you're hearing Hallel from a Bar Hachi, from someone who's Chayiv in Hallel, so just listen. And based on the principle of Shomei Kohane, you're going to fulfill your obligation of Mikra Hallel. The Gemara makes a similar, and I'm sorry, and our Mishnah is critical of the person who had the opportunity to learn, but didn't learn how to say Hallel. And Tavala Me'era, the Gemara speaks in really harsh terms about such an individual. The Gemara opens up with a statement regarding the same basic idea by benching. If someone needs either his child or his wife or his Eved to bench on his behalf, so Tavala Me'era. Okay. Rava points out that there are many minhagim as it relates to the recitation of Hallel, and a lot of these minhagim are really encryptions of halachas, meaning that if you know the minhagim and you know the halachas, you'll know that many halachas were encrypted into the minhagim. And these old minhagim are there to remind us of various halachas. And we covered 6 various minhagim. And just quickly to review, the first of the minhagim is to respond haluka after the first mention of haluka. Second one is that after every phrase, the response should be haluka. Third minhag is once you get to Hodol Hashem, that's a new section of Hallel. So therefore, the appropriate response by everyone should be Hodol Hashem. The fourth minhag is after Ana Hashem Oshiyana, the response of everyone is Ana Hashem Oshiyana. The fifth minhag is after Ana Hashem Atzlichana. Everyone responds with Ana Hashem Atzlichana. And the sixth minhag is Baruch Haba, said by the Sheikh Sibor, and V'shem Hashem is said by the people. And based on these 6 minhagim, so we have learned that there are halachas encrypted in each of these minhagim. And not to go through every one of the halachas, but just simply to highlight number 6, Baruch Haba V'shem Hashem, that tells us the idea of Shomei Ka'ona. That as long as I listen, even if I don't say it, it's ki'ilu, I said it, and therefore I was Yossi Zayin. That's the principle, the idea of Shomei Ka'ona, and the Gemara gives us a source based on Pesukim and Malachim regarding Yoshiyahu and the reading of the Sefer Torah in front of Yoshiyahu, and the Pasuk treats it as if he read it himself, so a source in Navi that gets us the idea of Shomei Ka'ona, and finally we covered a very fundamental Rashi that talks about Shomei Ka'oneh in terms of using that principle to help somebody who's in the middle of Shemoneh Esrei, but here's the Shliach Tzibur either saying Kaddish or Kedusha, and what should you do? Rashi says you should stop and listen. Shomei Ka'oneh will give you credit for having said it, and at the same time, it's not like you actually said it, which it creates a hefsek in your davening.